Hello, everyone. Tiffany here on another episode of Deep Dive with Stephen.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Stephen, when was the last time you posted a review? I mean, maybe, you know, your haircut, your food, your manicure services.
My manicure?
Or your spa.
No, I generally don't post reviews.
Why?
I don't like to. Yeah. Why? I just feel like, I don't know. It's not a habit of mine. I actually don't even really look at reviews to begin with.
Oh, okay.
Not for food.
Uh-huh.
Maybe hotel or accommodation, but food I don't actually.
Oh, food you don't. Okay.
And if I do look at a review, it's to discover whether there's a new place.
Okay.
I don't really look at the like what they say about it. I'm looking more at the picture, see how clean it is.
Yeah. So I'm very different from you because I will actually look at the food review.
Okay.
So I will look through, you know, Google. I will look through, you know, whether people are posting their own review of, you know, the place, what food to order, you know, things like that. Like, I feel like I need to go in prepared.
Oh, so we're going there, you know, like, okay, this restaurant, the top five dishes are blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I cannot be disappointed. It's my one and only chance.
Okay, I'm sure you are like many others out there. And we're going to talk about this today because recently there was a report on how a restaurant in Geylang called Eat First was hit by a wave of negative Google reviews and its rating dropped from 4.2 to 2.5. Another case at a recent Ramadan bazaar, a business owner put up a sign asking customers to speak to the business owner. In other words, come and tell me. Anything you don't like, come and tell me first. Don't give me a bad review, you know?
Yeah, so... And I think it got us thinking, right? Because we were talking about these two examples. And then we start thinking, you know, what is the state of our own online review culture here in Singapore? Do they matter? And are we as Singaporeans too critical about, you know, businesses? Or is this just how things work online? Joining us today, we have Dr. Elmi Nekmat from the Department of Communications and New Media at NUS.
Hello, everyone.
We also have food reviewer, foodbaby.sg, as she's known online. But in real life, she's known as Leong Yong Sin. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
All right, Yong Sin, let's start with you. How much impact do you think food reviews like yours have on businesses?
Pretty big impact, I would say, because for myself personally, when I help like home-based businesses or even restaurant owners who are struggling initially, and when I help them to post a food review and it actually goes viral, I do receive feedback that, oh, it helped to boost their sales significantly. And I do see, like, even if it's like a hidden restaurant where initially there were like little to no queue, suddenly the next time I revisit, it will be like a really long queue because people rediscovered this place through my post. So I think that food reviews do still have like a significant outreach because it's like, it can reach out to so many people, right? If a post goes viral, we're talking about tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it does have a significant impact.
Elmi, I want to bring you into the conversation. Why are reviews like these even important in the first place? Like, does it say something about that consumer behavior, people like me?
Yeah, I think reviews are inevitable, right? Mm. All humans, they need some kind of information to reduce uncertainty, especially when they need to make a decision. It could be food, it could be travel, it could be accommodation. So therefore, as long as there is a need for to make an informed decision, there will always be a need for reviews, be it online or even face-to-face or real-life reviews.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, in real life, it's just a sense of crowdsourcing. I want to ask as many people as I can who have been there before me, you know, to give me their sense of what they think is good, bad about this place.
Yeah. Outside of your line of work, do you also look at food reviews before you visit a place?
Mm. For sure. I think before I even step foot into a restaurant, if let's say me and my friends are walking past like a cafe and we see like, oh, it looks pretty good, I think before I even step foot, I'll whip out my Google Maps and then I'll check like the Google reviews and see what people are saying about it. So it's like the reviews are positive, and as you said, like, it gives me some kind of expectations already, then I'll probably go in if the expectations are like pretty high.
So you have a bunch of people just standing outside looking at their phone, not going in yet, and then after that they walk away.
It's not uncommon, a bunch of friends standing around, where shall we go tonight for dinner? And everyone's like checking their phone, deciding where to go.
Yeah.
In fact, right, it's not even at the point of decision. For myself, right, sometimes I already made that decision to go into that restaurant.
Okay.
And then it's part of the experience. So when I sat at the restaurant, when I sit down at the restaurant, I was like, okay, what do I order? How is it like? Then I started to then go to the reviews and go to the website to find out what to order and stuff.
Yeah. So the review really does play a part in your expectations.
Definitely.
So if it's a really good review, everyone says wonderful things, you go in there kind of thinking, okay, I expect good stuff.
Yes.
that can also be a bad thing, right? Because if everyone says it's good and you go, then you're like, actually not so good, you know?
Yeah.
And then,
have you had people talk about your own review feedback before?
My own review feedback?
Yeah, like you say something about a cafe and then after that people write back and say, that's not kind of my experience.
Yeah, I think recently I saw a comment saying that the prices were not as expected, because I think in my initial post I wasn't very detailed about the specific pricing because there were tiers to like the ice cream gelato thing. So they did return a feedback and say that my post didn't detail it properly. So then their expectations were a bit mismatched. So of course I did take that into consideration and change my caption to better reflect the prices.
Okay. So you would actually take into account other people's feedback of your own feedback.
I think if it's like price related, if it's not subjective taste related, then yes, I will take into account. But if let's say you come back to my post and you tell me that, oh, you went but it's a bit too salty for your liking, then of course I'm not going to change my review because to me, maybe I felt that it was fine. You felt that it was too salty, then that's just a mismatch in like preferences.
Because at the end of the day, food is very subjective.
Mm. Correct.
It's 100% subjective. What I feel is salty may not be that much to you, right?
That's right.
So when we rely so much on food reviews, does it take away the agency of letting us be able to make our own decisions based on our own preferences?
Yes and no. Right. I mean, to some extent, most users or most consumers would look at a review, food review, and like, oh, that's just his or her opinion, right? But it's not only a one-person review. So when we go online reviews, right, we have the ratings, right? We have the number of reviewers, right? So if there are, for example, this number of reviewers that say salty, and you know, salty comes out in the first page or when you read the comments, right? Then you can kind of have an idea that, well, generally, a lot of people think it's salty.
Right.
Or there's a comment on top of that reply and then comment and so forth. So you kind of have an idea that it hovers around that taste or that kind of experience.
Or after a while, maybe I get to know that Food Baby, you know, her account is similar to my taste.
Mm-hmm.
So when she says something is nice, I know I'll probably like it versus...
I can trust, right?
Know?
Yeah.
But also, I think in general, as a culture, as a review culture, I mean, to be honest, I think we leave only the negative reviews. I mean, very rarely would we leave positive reviews. And even when I see positive reviews now, I wonder if they were coerced or they were enticed to leave a good review.
Did they get a free meal or were they paid to say that?
Or they were offered a free ice cream.
Yeah,
right,
free
to give
anything.
A 5-star Google review.
Yeah,
so I mean, do we in general as a culture, do we tend to put negative reviews first rather than positive reviews?
When it comes to online kind of reviews, right? Generally, negative reviews gets a lot more traction.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's based on the algorithmic kind of system that's in place, right? So the negative reviews gets a lot more traction, gets a lot more attention, and then it amplifies, and more people, and then it just grows. But not necessarily that it's all negative. Humans are also motivated to share very positive. So what we get is a very extreme kind of views, very positive reviews, because I'm really happy. There's this server who is really very nice and who really makes my dining experience or my consumption experience really wonderful. And I just want to, you know, give a positive comment to him or her. And then I'll give a very positive review.
Mm.
But more often than not, what's lost is the middle balanced review.
But then some would say, that's life. What? I'm not interested in the middle band. It's just normal. It's average. It's expected. What you gave me was expected. So I don't need to say that it's good or bad.
Yep, you're right. Yep. But therein lies the flaw in online reviews. There it tends to lie in the extremes. Yes.
And also I have seen signs as well that, you know, like I say earlier on, restaurants will put there, if you give us a 5-star Google review and we can check, then we will give you a free ice cream. So it says something here, right? That I don't know whether we can trust whether the online reviews are what they say they are, because I don't know how many people got the free ice cream.
Personally, I don't think that is entirely unethical.
Really? Why?
Yeah, it depends on two things, right? Okay. It depends on the value of the items that you are giving to consumers or the customer. If the value is obviously a lot, it might sound like, okay, I really want that and therefore I'm giving the review. But if the value is of like, okay, just a 50 cents ice cream or a $1 ice cream that doesn't, and I really feel that, you know, this is good, and it just might, you know, motivate somebody to, okay, just write that review for that 50 cents ice cream. I think that is fairly fine. So you need to strike that that balance in that sense.
Okay, so let's up the ante then. Then we know there are certain reviewers who are paid to give a review. So you're literally, I hire you, I will pay you $5,000 for this review. Come and eat my food.
But that's
generally the review will come out good, right? I mean, so yeah. So how do you feel about that?
I think that is fine too, in the for the sake of business, right? So I think more importantly, users should be critical and should be able to discern that in that review that is written, it is a form of business. There's a transaction going on, which also requires the influencer or the content creator to actually have a disclosure.
They need to have a declaration. This, right?
Yeah. And if that procedure is in place, okay, then I think it's fine for anyone or content creator to be paid to review.
I mean, there are different ways for them to declare. They don't necessarily have to, you know, put there that it's a sponsored post or anything. They can also say, I was invited for this media, you know, event, or then, you know, I'm trying out this, that kind of stuff. I think there are different ways to disclose.
But I guess the point is, as a consumer, I want to know how you were treated so that I can then make my own judgment as to, yeah, okay, you know.
But I don't know if people care that much, because if I know that this person is a reviewer, I'm looking at their content, and maybe all I'm interested to know is, if I go there, what should I order? It's not whether I will go there, should I go there or not, but I am making the decision that I will go there. Now I want to know, what should I order? How does that relationship work with businesses?
I think there's two ways. So one is the butter collaborations. So it's just butter trading where the restaurant, or let's say the home-based business, they will sponsor the food for free, and we are expected to then post like a carousel or a reel for free as well. So that's butter trade. Whereas for the other one, where it's paid collaborations, the restaurant will also sponsor the food, and then they will also provide like a compensation for the post that you're putting out.
Can you be 100% honest with your review though? If let's say you don't really like the food.
I can't say for everyone, but for me personally, I will just go back to the business owner and tell them that this is what I've thought about the food. I didn't think it lived up to my expectations, and I don't feel comfortable sharing it and like not writing the negative part. So are you okay if, let's say, I do write the negative parts? I'm going to say that if it's too salty, I'm going to say that it's too salty. Yep. Or maybe I felt that it was a bit too pricey for what you gave me, then I'm going to say I don't think it's really quite worth the price. So if, let's say, the business owner is not keen on me putting this, then I will just drop the collaboration. And it has happened before where I decided not to move forward with the collaboration because, you know, we had missed the line, like expectations. I wasn't going to post something that wasn't 100% my honest review.
But also, I also don't think that you can be, you know, 100%, you know, I would say honest, but 100% always giving them criticism, right? Because at the end of the day, you don't want to make people feel that you are a very difficult person to work with.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that out?
In our food review, we don't tend to be overcritical. So we just try to focus on the positive sides of the foods. For example, maybe the presentation is really nice, then we will focus more on the presentation of the dishes. Or if, let's say, the taste is not too bad, it's like average, then maybe we could focus a bit on the price point. Maybe it's very affordable, and that's why you can't expect like it to taste like amazing.
Right.
So I guess that's how we try to balance things out a bit. We try to focus on the positive things and maybe not so much on the negative things, so that it will please like the business as well, and they won't find it like very difficult to work with us also.
So it comes back down to the fact that as a consumer, I must be able to read between the lines.
Exactly.
LB, do you know how to read between the lines?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting point here. I think from a consumer or a user literacy perspective or media literacy perspective, I think it's kind of safe to assume that whenever you see a review, especially for myself, it's like you already have an assumption that the reviews are paid reviews. So that is a good assumption, whether it's paid or in butter or in kind, there was some kind of a negotiation going on. I think that is a baseline. Then the challenge now is whenever we see a review is to identify which of the these reviews are not paid. Are reviews that, and this often comes in the authenticity of reviews, for example, hawker food, for example. So we know food store aunties and uncles, they're not able to pay that much. Right, so they really depend on people coming in, on the goodwill, and to really review food as by itself. So the challenge is to identify these authentic experiences. Yeah.
But I'm saying you can be paid and authentic too. It's just that you need to build up that name before that.
Yes,
and the thing is now, with those that are not paid, usually they will declare it very loudly. This is not a paid review. Yeah. I'm here trying, you know.
So it's almost the reverse.
Exactly.
I assume everybody else is like 90% of them are all paid. That's my general assumption.
But are there telltale signs in the way that you are reading a review that says, okay, quite confirm this one is not a paid or collab stuff?
Like what Steve mentioned, you'll be very explicitly said.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I'm not being paid for it and I'm actually eating this and I'm commenting on it, I would want to say that this is not paid. I paid for it with my own money.
I just spent $500 on this meal and I'm telling you it.
So they'll make it very obvious.
Yeah.
So that's one. If there are no mention, I think it's kind of difficult. I think you have to make your own informed decision, compare between the different reviewers on the same food. I mean, it's easy to just Google and then find out this, you know, the location or the name of the place, and then compare between different reviewers and so forth. Yeah.
But, you know, we are assuming that people know how to read reviews. Is that truly the case for the general population?
What they need to do is to have a sense of awareness. Like, for example, that all these reviews are not truths. And that level of awareness by itself, right, will make them be more skeptical in that sense, will make them think twice. So that is the first level of literacy. Like, for example, all this information are just signals, right? So they must know that, okay, at the end of the day, I make my own decision. So I have to make my most informed decision.
Also, a lot of these reviews are for, like, when I travel overseas, I'm not familiar with the place. So I do look more at the reviews because I want to find the best whatever, you know, the best steak in town, and I'm looking around. So that's when I trust the reviews more. And I guess that's also when I'm more vulnerable, right? Because I'm not familiar with the location, the culture, the everything, the language. Is there a way to sort of read those reviews to turn on different, you know, brain when I'm traveling so that I know how to check out the blind spots?
Well, obviously, there are a lot of risks, especially when you travel to a place where you have never been before.
Yeah.
Right? And accommodation can be very costly. Right? And I mean, apart from food, we first need to have a hotel, right? A hostel or even Airbnb, right? And we really depend on the reviews for the Airbnb. So there is definitely a level of risk. And secondly, users have a tendency to actually evaluate based on their cost benefit or risk benefit analysis, right?
Okay.
So for example, right, if this accommodation is $100 a night, which is very affordable compared to a $500 accommodation, then my tendency to rely on reviews and check and verify then becomes heightened, right? Especially when you need to spend a lot of money. So I think it's not very simple and straightforward, but it's inevitable that we really need to depend on reviews.
So you're saying when the risk is higher, then you will depend more on your reviews?
Not only depend, you will go into more elaboration, more evaluation of the reviews.
Yeah, I want to verify it more.
I want to verify it more, yeah.
Okay. I mean, same thing, if I'm going to a fine dining restaurant where it's $500 a hit for the meal versus $10 a hit for the meal, you know, $10, I'll be like, yeah, I just tried, man. What's the worst thing that could happen,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
You
know? Eat more later on. Go McDonald's later on. $500.
Yeah. At least I know whether I can trust that reviewer or not, right? Whether it works or not. So I know that this reviewer can be trusted, and then I'll build
a
relationship.
So you pay for the lesson. you pay for the lesson.
Yeah, yeah.
See whether you
hopefully
trust
it's
the
a good
reviewer.
Lesson.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the other thing I want to bring up as well also is the idea of malicious reviews, right? The rating bombs. The ones that, you know, they can suddenly plummet a four-star review into, you know, a 2-point-something, right? So what are the telltale signs that, okay, this eatery or this establishment is getting rating bombed?
No, I think the recent one was the first time I saw it happening, where people who have never even dined in before started leaving like 1-star reviews just because of this piece of news that went viral, right? So it was quite shocking to me also to see.
So does it usually come like because people feel a sense of injustice, or is it really paid?
Actually, why is the online community like that?
When we talk about our conservative culture, right? More often than not, we are less confrontational face to face. So we do not want to confront anyone, especially like restaurants face to face, if we have a problem.
Right.
But we might take it out online. right? But even so, we might not necessarily take it out online. But when we see other people corroborating what we feel online and it's going viral, then it's like, okay, fine, since there's a distance and I'm just corroborating, it's not my own opinion. There's a collective consensus and I'll be more likely to then share my opinion. Of course, this could all be altruistic. Right, in that sense, you know, this is not because I want to bring it down, but everybody's feeling that way. So I'm chipping in my voice to save the general consumer, for example. Oh. So there is some level of trying to inform in that sense. So that's just one explanation.
Okay. Unlike other countries, we don't actually have a culture where people would buy malicious bots to review bomb people. Because I mean, I've heard of it overseas. I'm sure you could, but I'm just wondering whether have you heard of it happening here in Singapore where people actually buy these bots?
Well, I think this really depends on the platform itself.
Yeah.
Whether the platform implements certain technologies or certain systems to actually identify such bots and fake reviews by identifying patterns in language usage or by identifying certain account patterns and so forth. But even then, it's almost impossible for platforms that uses AI to actually eradicate all this or to remove all these reviews. More often than not, they assign weights into such reviews or such accounts and so forth. Yeah. So in the case that they do not eliminate or remove accounts that are real, right? So they assign weights and they uprank or downrank certain information.
But you can never be 100% sure. I mean, it's just like buying likes on your social media account.
You know?
One thing you can be sure about, that if there's a good steak, I mean, I love steak, it's a good steak, right? Because steak puns are a rare medium well done.
I had to make a while.
I knew it was coming. Just to wrap up, how can we, you know, ensure that we, you know, as consumers, give an authentic review? Would you recommend for us to approach the restaurateur or whoever it is directly, like what you do, you know, and say, okay, this is a little bit too salty or whatever? Or should we just say, you know what, maybe no need to rock the boat, and maybe I'm only going to highlight the fact that, like, if there are rats, then I inform other people, but then, you know, maybe, you know, be a bit loosey-goosey with my salt problems.
Otherwise, it's like almost a checklist, you know. Every restaurant is graded based on the same 10 things.
I think individuals can be a bit discerning themselves, like, based on what restaurant they're at. For example, for me personally, if it's like a local restaurant or like a home-based business where I know that they are already struggling to make ends meet, right? Then I'll probably, like, at least exercise some graciousness on my part as much as I can to tell them first that, hey, I don't think your food was very nice. And it's not just me, my partner or my friends also had the same feedback. So maybe there needs to be something done about this food menu item. And if, let's say, they give me favorable response and tell me that, okay, they're gonna work on it, then that's great. Then the next time I can probably come back and see whether, like, the changes are made. But I think if it's for, like, big restaurants, probably there's no need to exercise that much caution with them.
Elmi, would you recommend that, you know, whatever it is, see as a public service and still, I mean, if it's bad, we see it as a public service and inform everybody for the greater good? Or should we still, you know, do our little feedback form right into people?
I agree with her. I think reviews are important, important part of our consumption and our democratic nature of information. Otherwise, if reviews were to just remain, like, for example, right, previously when we look at food critics, they're always on the newspaper, right? And we really depend on food critics on the newspaper or, you know, travel logs. Those are still important because they're very credible, but we also need content creators, we also need influence, we need normal people like us to be able to provide their own experiences and information. And I think that is very important, because if you just look at it, right, it can create ripple effect, or it can create, for example, like, you know, business owners or home-based businesses or even hawkers, right, to actually get some kind of recognition for their food, and with that kind of recognition or even virality, gets to grow their businesses. It really boils down to the consumer who actually is facing the information. I believe we can never take anything online as the truth, especially when it comes to online reviews. They are very important signals, right? They are very important data points, especially in today's AI age, where the AI itself, you know, AI technology are summarizing and ranking. And so we need to understand between rank, like what you kind of mentioned, where there's objective criteria, as compared to a bit more subjective and opinions kind of reviews. So there needs to be some kind of a differentiation. But we then need to be aware. We need to be aware that when it comes to opinions, they are just signals, they are not truths.
I think that's a good point. So just signals along the way to help you make a more informed decision. But actually, I feel that we should just be more compassionate. We should just talk to the business first. Whether it's good, if it's good, give them a compliment. Tell them. If it's bad, also tell them. It's only when they react a certain way. I've complained before, but I write in an email to the main office or whatever, when the attitude of that person or the manager or what is really bad, then... But otherwise,
You know, when Elmi, you were bringing up the point about how democratizing the information, I also think about the fact that while it is no longer in the hands of a few, I also feel that all of us now armed with a mobile phone, I think we need to be a bit more responsible.
Yes.
Right? With the way we review stuff. That's where, you know, it's going to be hard because, you know, when we are behind a screen, it's easy to
say a lot of things. Yeah. And we are a bit of a complainer society.
Yeah, we are.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hope that after this discussion, people will be more informed as to how to properly read their reviews. Mm-hmm. Again, just treat them as not the truth, but a signal on what to order, whether to dine there, you know, things like that.
Yeah. We are done with the chat, but let us know what you think. I mean, we all love to eat our food. We all love to check the reviews and see who's saying what.
Yeah.
But, you know, next time you do it, look at it a bit more carefully. And if you think we've missed something here on the podcast, jump in, drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. But otherwise, that's it for this week's episode of Deep Dive. Bye for now.
Bye.